Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, we're coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. I have a question. Wait a minute. Did you hear? Did people hear DA during that promo? Ryan, am I nuts?
Oh, no, we heard it loud and clear.
He's saying cold drinks, and when you have a cold drink, the key to a cold drink is ice on top. Like, does it stay on top of the liquid, or does it fall in? What's he mean by this?
The only thing I could think of is because sometimes, depending on the glass you have, the ice could stick to the bottom. You know, you got to either bang on the table or shake it around and break
it
free.
You do a little bit of a shake, and it breaks free and it bubbles to the top. It's wonderful. That's the best feeling of it all.
Right, but other than that, I was trying to explain a way that that made sense, and I just couldn't do it, to be honest.
Wait a minute. Okay. Now, I didn't mean to start with this. I'm going to get to Case Keenum here in a moment, I promise, okay? What I'm hearing, though, it doesn't make any sense. I wish we could play the promo right here. If you have the promo, fire it again. On top. Brian.
Ken, I'm here. What's up?
What does he mean? Does he mean you pour the fluid in and then you drop the ice in?
Ken, I think sometimes in life we just need to accept that sometimes people are wrong.
That doesn't make any sense.
And here he's just wrong. It's a great promo, but he's wrong.
He's got me thinking.
He got us replaying the promo.
That's true. I guess you listen every day to DA to find out. But what I'm saying is that you can't pour the liquid in and then put the ice in. You got to put the ice in first so then you don't over pour. Because if you put too much liquid in, you understand, you get what I'm saying here, it changes the buoyancy of the fluid and then it could overflow.
Everyone knows this rule. You just put the ice in first and then the drink so it doesn't overflow.
Yeah, plus
it's like physics or something.
Say you take tea. And you put in the tea goes over the ice. So as the tea goes over the ice, it's cooling the tea. If the tea's in there and the tea's already warm, say it's sun tea, my God, that's hot. Then you're pouring the water. Then you're pouring the ice. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Someone needs to. I think upper management.
That's some stuff. Like I can't allege this. This is reckless. I'm sure that Ted Bundy did the same thing. That's what serial killers do, DA. Man, that is weird. 855-212-4CBS. I don't even want to take a call from somebody who's there because I'm just going to assume you're a serial killer. That is weird stuff. What's also weird stuff is that we continue. How about this for a transition, Hickey? You're going to love it. What's also weird stuff is that people continue to give John Elway a whole bunch of credit that he doesn't deserve. Now, I will love to say that I beat everybody to this punch 3 years ago, and people said, Ken, you're a heretic, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. And I say, yeah, but more than likely. However, and yesterday, it was one preseason game, and I don't like to overdo preseason games. I don't like to overdo glorified practice. I don't like to do this. Now I got people tweeting me about the ice. I got to turn off Twitter because I'm going to get distracted over here. I don't like to overreact to a preseason game. I saw some of the articles and some of the stuff that said, you know, they could have gotten the Broncos, they could have gotten Kirk Cousins, they went out and they got Case Keenum, they spent $10 million less, and it can make a world of difference to what the Denver Broncos are. Now, if it was based on this game, I can't agree with that because it's one preseason game. However, for both of their histories, I got to look at this situation and think, you know what, this is the beginning of a storyline that could have some real, real wheels to it. Because I have to be fair. I try to be fair. Because what I say about John Elway, who's a legend in his own right as a quarterback, and is certainly well-liked by the fans with the Denver Broncos, and a guy who won a Super Bowl a couple of years ago, I understand that when I say this about him, you're immediately going to say, that's hot take, you're just trying to start it. Fine, that's fair enough. And if you feel that way after this, then I guess we're just going to reach an impasse. But hear me out. Because watching yesterday, I didn't have any of this type of takeaway where, well, God, they could have got Kirk Cousins. However, it does, I have to admit, set a baseline. It sets a baseline for the people who write about the football team and obviously to the fans who watch the football team when it comes to John Elway. Because watching throughout his entire career, I start to wonder, are we falling into the same spot as Wayne Gretzky? Are we falling into the same spot as Michael Jordan? Are we falling into the same spot of people who were very, very good at what they did, but they didn't have the eye to emulate what they did on the field with picking guys after their time? Or, and this is even worse for John Elway, is it a guy who plays in the most important position, who knows how much is on a quarterback when it comes to the leadership, when it comes to being able to push a team down the field, when it comes to being able to keep a team afloat as a legendary, prolific franchise quarterback, keep a team afloat while they're making changes within the franchise personnel? Is this a guy who knew all this implicitly as a quarterback while he played and then has forgotten this as a general manager and team president? Or is this a guy who refuses to believe it and doesn't take his own greatness into consideration here? Because when you look over John Elway, and this is only the first preseason game, but it is the beginning of it. When you look over his entire career, 2010, Kyle Orton, Tim Tebow, it was his first year there. I'd like to give it a pass. Because you didn't really bring in a whole bunch of guys, obviously. You're just learning on that way. You had a different general manager at the time. So I'll give you that as a pass. 2012, you bring in Peyton Manning during the offseason. But during this, you have him, you draft Brock Osweiler in the second round. 2013, you lose the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. 2014, you lose in the playoffs with Peyton Manning. 2015, you win the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. However, look at every subsequent year. During 15, you draft Trevor Siemian in the seventh round. Automatically, people think that you know what you're talking about, and you remember some of the things that were written day three after that when you picked up Trevor Siemian in the seventh round. 2016, you start him, you draft Paxton Lynch. I'm talking about him being Trevor Siemian. You draft Paxton Lynch. You traded at the time for Mark Sanchez. You finish 9-7. You're out of the playoffs. You have six Pro Bowlers overall. You have 4 of 6 on the defense. 2 were wide receivers. Your 3 all-pro players were all defensive. 2017, new coach comes in, 5-11, Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch. You drafted Chad Kelly as a favor to your buddy. Over that time, 2 Pro Bowlers, both defense, and Von Miller and Aqib Talib, and 1 All-Pro and Von Miller. 2018, you sign Case Keenum instead of Kirk Cousins. You're 5-11. You draft in the top 5. You have Keenum, Paxton Lynch, Chad Kelly, who, God, probably looked the best out of the entire group, but he's playing against 3rd and 4th teamers. Fine. And you drafted Bradley Chubb instead of a quarterback. Now, at that time, we can go back and say Baker Mayfield was off the board, Sam Darnold was off the board. The ones that were left were Josh Allen and Josh Rosen, and there were many questions about that. That's absolutely fair. But if you're going to go after a guy like Bradley Chubb, and you're going to bring in a guy who obviously, or you're going to keep a guy like Von Miller, and you still have guys on that defense that are still able to roll, even as you start to cycle through it and make your changes to your roster, do you or do you not owe yourself the very best when it comes, or the very best possible when it comes to the quarterback position? Because if I look at this, Case Keenum off to this type of start, which is just rocky in the preseason, and it's just a preseason. But if he starts off rocky to this, then this ball that I've been trying to push up the hill for the last 3 years, looking at going, man, this is really Peyton Manning's legacy. This isn't John Elway's legacy. Look at the decisions that have been made since here. You've had chances to make yourself better throughout the draft. You took Paxton Lynch. It's become a mess. You've had a chance to make yourself better through trades. You took Case Keenum. I don't know if it's going to be a mess, but you had a chance to go out there and take greatness, and you decided to go the cheaper route. You decided to put it on the defense. A quarterback, a former quarterback, and not just any quarterback, a legend, decided to put it on defense. Let that sink in for a moment. Every conversation we have, now there is always going to be the chicken or the egg conversation about defenses winning championships, helping out quarterbacks, and we can look through the history. There have been some good football teams that have helped out some young quarterbacks. But if that were to be the way it goes, then wouldn't have that made the argument to then maybe draft a quarterback instead of Bradley Chubb? Well, Bradley Chubb's a fantastic player. Okay, turn it on its own right. Do you not want to bring a guy like that in who's very, very young and going to be playing on what's supposed to be a competitive team with a competitive quarterback that has played at a high level? $10 million before, and what I got so upset about years before is when Brock Osweiler decides to go to Houston, and he goes for $16 million. And people cheer and they scream and they yell because Brock Osweiler sucked up the room down in Houston. And John Elway knew. And John Elway didn't spend the $16 million. He still offered him $15. He still drafted him in the second round. And if he would have made the playoffs and saved that money, then it would have been an argument. But except that he went 9-7 and they missed the playoffs. So where's this argument here? So over this time, I have Kyle Orton and Tim Tebow, and I give you that as a pass because you just start. Then you bring in Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning has all the reasons in the world, and he decided to come to you. Fine, I give you that as a feather in the cap, and you win a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. But you know going in, because you've been through the rigors of it before, you aren't going to be able to hold on to that guy forever. He's a legend in his own right, and in turn, all this, the more you keep messing up at the quarterback position, the worse that the great pirate in Paxton Lynch looks, the worse that maybe Case Keenum looks coming up this year, the worse that any of these other picks, any of these other guys have ever looked in the past, the worse that they look, the better Peyton Manning looks in that turn. Through a season he was injured with torn quads, with all the other injuries, with the shoulder that he had to go through, and went out there and played a good game of football and won that Super Bowl, it still makes him look better than you ever could as a general manager. Because one guy is a legend. And people know going in, and I would hope that you know going in, that a quarterback is what's going to make all this tick, because you can spend everything you want to on Von Miller, you could have spent everything you wanted to on Aqib Talib, and all your other defensive players. You were 9-7 with Trevor Siemian. You were 5-11 with him and Brock Osweiler. You're going down, you're not going up. And if I look past this draft, if you're drafting fifth overall or top five overall, it's going to be the question of what did you do to build this thing for the future? And if you had an out and you used it on Case Keenum and Case Keenum sucks up the room, it's a great thing you won two Super Bowls in incredible fashion and are the darling son of everybody in the Mile High City, because if you were anybody else, you'd be out on your ass. Because a guy who is a legendary and a quarterback in his own right should know the buck will always stop with a quarterback. Whether or not they can run it, throw it, catch it, whether or not they can play defense, it's still going to start and finish with a quarterback. You can have an all-time defense like you did. You can have Manning like you did. And it'll still be questioned on you. And you played in a Super Bowl against Seattle that beat the brakes off of you. And you can play an all-time defense like that, who's going to be better for the future? You both got your Super Bowl. What did they go? They go out and they have themselves a franchise quarterback. They can turn around and retool it. Right now, you keep throwing things at the biggest problem and keep throwing little stones at the biggest problem instead of trying to go out there and trying to fix it. Duct tape is not going to fix the biggest problem that you have. You're throwing duct tape on a furnace, you're going to find yourself in a big problem. I hope I'm wrong. For Case Keenum's sake, for Broncos fans' sake, and certainly for John Elway's legacy. And if I'm wrong, at the end of the year, I will be more than happy to come out here and say it. But for 3 years, Siemian, where Peter King loved carrying the water there and had the great big feature on NBC, Paxton Lynch, a whole bunch of promise, nothing of substance, and drafting a guy late because he's your buddy's nephew, ain't getting you any closer to where you need to be. And if it was any other guy by any other name, you're on your way out. 855-212-4CBS. Coming up next, it's Farrah Fowl on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is the Ken Carmen Show. It's time to find out whose side Ken Carmen is on in this week's edition of Fair or Foul.
I got one more thing I got to add to that. Can we just give Peyton Manning, I know Peyton Manning is one of the greatest ever, so people are going to go tell me to pound sand. Can we give him a little bit more credit? Like, if Case Keenum really sucks, can we give Peyton Manning a little bit more credit? Because that guy has been covering up for boobery his entire career. Did it with Jim Irsay, doing it with John Elway or did it with John Elway. Like, that's got to count for something, doesn't it? Like, Tom Brady's great, and Bill Belichick's great, and there's people out there who would pick Belichick over Brady. I don't even think Belichick would pick himself over Brady, but they'd still do that, and you know, as you were one of the greats. In the meantime, Peyton Manning had what? The ownership was what? Like, Pat Bowlen was known as a great owner. It's a great organization. At least they do still have that. But Peyton Manning's covered up for boobery his entire life. Just, I gotta get that off my chest. That's all. All right, go right on ahead.
All right, after boobery, I mean, hopefully I can focus on this. All right, number one.
Silliness.
Kansas State head coach Bill Snyder, already the NCAA's oldest active coach, is not going anywhere soon.
Yeah.
The 78-year-old just signed a 5-year extension, keeping him as the head man of the Wildcats until 2022. Snyder owns the third most wins among active coaches and has been with the Wildcats for 27 years. So fair or foul, Snyder will pass 84-year-old Joe Paterno as the oldest coach to ever coach in an NCAA college football game.
I say foul. I know he's been trying to hand it off to his son for a while. I know that there was a couple of boosters who were looking at the guy out of Oregon for a while. I think that one's gone belly up. But I think foul. 83? He'll be 83, right, at the end of that contract?
Correct.
That's very old. I get nervous because I really like Bill Snyder, and I really like – I've never even been further west than Kansas City, Missouri. I really, really like K-State. I think they got a really cool thing out there in Manhattan, Kansas. I think that a guy like Bill Snyder, who goes to a team that was a complete and utter doormat for about 100 years before he got there and turned them into a respectable program – he deserves a ton of credit. He deserves to be a legend in his own right. I hope, though, there's certain things that I hope time doesn't pass him by. And I mean off the field as well, when we talk about Joe Paterno. I hope off the field he's able to keep everybody in line, because I'd hate something bad to happen there. Because I really, really like Bill Snyder. And he's one of those guys, when Sean Pendergast asked that question earlier today about what coach, can you name a coach that you'd be totally 100% comfortable with sending your kid to? Chris Peterson is at the top of that list. That I would feel the best at. Chris Peterson at Wisconsin or at Washington. I would still feel pretty good about Paul Christ at Wisconsin, and Bill Snyder's definitely there. Bill Snyder's definitely there. So the man is a legend in his own right. 83's old, though, man. God, that's old. I'm still going to say no, that's foul. Next.
All right, earlier today, the Jacksonville Jaguars announced that Jalen Ramsey has been suspended from training camp for 1 week following a profanity-laced outburst directed at the media both in person and on social media. Dante Fowler Jr. was also suspended for his involvement in a few brush-ups with his teammates over the last few days. So fair or foul, this punishment is more of a reprieve, than anything else.
That's no punishment. How is that a punishment? If they make him go in and they have to watch everything and still go through the day, then that's a punishment. You're letting guys go home during camp? Oh, God, they're going to play video games. It's the same thing as, like, some kid. Oh, my God, you're suspended for a week. And it was just the only fear. Like, the only reason I was afraid to be suspended in school is because my dad was going to get me. Like, I knew that, and so that's why I didn't get suspended in school. But if you ever got suspended, oh, my God, you're going to miss school. They always let you make it up. Now, I don't know if they do that anymore. They did that with every other school. They always let you make up the work. So you give me a week off? A week off in training camp? I don't have to play in some meaningless preseason game. I don't have to do any of this other stuff. I can still work out and do anything I want. That is not any sort of a punishment whatsoever. It is a reprieve that's foul. Next.
Around this time in NFL training camp, tempers start to flare and guys get tired of hitting each other. A common practice is to relieve tension by showing your displeasure by escalating tempers, which usually lead to fights. Earlier today, a massive brawl broke out between the Jets and the Redskins in a joint practice, and virtually every NFL team has at least one fight breakout each training camp.
Mm-hmm.
So fair or foul, fighting during training camp is healthy for team morale moving forward.
Listen, I think there's times where you want guys to be amped up. You want guys to have passion. Violence is a part of the game. So I think there is a very fine line there. Camp, though, you're trying to get things worked out. You're trying to get things going for the rest of the year. You're trying to work out some of the kinks, trying to try some different things. It can only get in the way. And when we have these joint practices, it happens all the time. It's the same thing I look at with Jacksonville. We just talked about Jalen Ramsey and Dante Fowler. They don't even have to travel because they're going up to Minnesota. They don't have to travel and go up to Minnesota in a joint practice where you could have yourself maybe a dust up with a teammate, but it's a teammate there. And then you're going to be taken on in drills. You might be with some guys from another team. Those guys are fourth team guys. You're taking on a guy who's the 86th man on the roster. He'll try to fight you for real. He'll get upset and he'll, because he has nothing to lose. He'll try to go after you. So I don't know why we even have joint practices anymore, which every single time we have a joint practice, there's always a big fight going on. What's the point? If we're going to sit here and complain about the fights, but we're still going to have joint practices, I think we're going against our own goodness. Foul. Next.
Browns rookie receiver Antonio Callaway has had a very troubled past that didn't stop once he was drafted by Cleveland in the fourth round in this year's draft. Callaway was cited for marijuana possession and driving with a suspended license last week. As punishment for the citation, Browns head coach Hugh Jackson decided to play Callaway as much as possible in the first preseason game against the Giants. The former Florida receiver was on the field for 54 of the possible 63 offensive plays the Browns ran, and even tried to come off the field a few times before the staff waved him on to keep him on the field. Fair or foul, this type of punishment is more effective than making the player sit out an entire game.
This is the equivalent. This is like my wife going, I'm mad at you. We're going to have all the sex you want right now. Oh, yeah? Well, now we'll have some sex and you'll eat ice cream while we're having the sex. How about that? Okay, you keep it up. You're eating pizza, too. And me, in the meantime, we'll put Caddyshack up on the TV, okay? Now you're really going to get it. How is that a punishment? Like, I know it's like keeping him on the field, and some people said, well, he's going to be real tired. Well, I hope he's going to be real tired. If he's playing in the fourth quarter of a regular season game, he's going to be pretty tired then, too. I don't know how that was a punishment. And did you notice this? Now, did you or did you not see Hard Knocks this week?
I did, yes.
So you had the conversation with Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley, where Todd Haley said, we can't be living in our own fear. Guys got to play through some of this. We're giving guys days off, and they don't need days off. And Hugh Jackson said, and there was a point to be taken where he is the head coach, and the buck should stop there, and I'm glad he used his power because you don't want any of that other stuff going on. But he had also said that we need these guys available. So you need these guys available. You will probably need Antonio Callaway available. Nah, we'll run him into the ground. And then he comes back. He had a rib injury today and couldn't make it all the way through practice. I don't know how playing a guy, like going to work, I don't know how that's a penalty. I don't know how that is something that's wrong. Like doing something you're supposed to love. Again, I don't know how that's a problem. So if you really want to punish me and you want to give me a bunch of pizza and sex and movies and ice cream, I guess I'll take that as a punishment. Because to me, that's the equivalent of a football player getting to play all the football he can handle. Unless this was like a football equivalent of you catching your son smoking and so you make him smoke the whole carton. I don't understand this. So is that, I would take that as foul, right, Hickey?
Yeah, no, yeah. That's foul. Right. That would be appropriate there.
Excellent. You got any more?
We have one more if you want.
Please, go.
All right. And finally, one Steeler fan took fantasy cap into his own hands on Saturday.
Yeah.
Dressed in full gear, including shoulder pads, a helmet, and a yellow practice jersey, the fan snuck onto the practice field for a few moments before security recognized the hoax and removed him from the field. Many Steeler players found this funny, with Antonio Brown saying he should, if the fan wanted to guard him, he should be allowed to guard him. So fair or foul, the fan should be able to line up against Antonio Brown and take him one-on-one.
For a million reasons. For Antonio Brown's safety, for everybody else's safety, to not set a precedent, I have to say that's foul. But in terms of it being fun, yes, absolutely, that's fair. First off, the guy wore a full uniform with a helmet, had a mouthpiece and everything. He was ready. This guy was ready. And you could tell he was crushed. He had made it that far, and someone figured out going, hey, man, Troy Polamalu hadn't played for us in a long time. Who the hell is that joker over there? I kind of want to see it, but I know for a million reasons you can't do it. For all those reasons I just said, plus like a ton more. But it should be fair. You should allow it. If you're going to go through all that, what's one play? Antonio Brown's going to burn him anyway, and then you can kick him out of there and never let him back in again. But I can understand. That's fair or foul. Wonderful job, Hickey. Really a great job as always. Coming up at 1 a.m. Eastern, we'll get back to Tiger Woods and Brooks Koepka. I should say Koepka and Tiger Woods. Koepka was the one who won the PGA Championship. Coming up right now, though, Jeff Ehrman going to join us. InsideMDSports.com. Things have taken a turn in Maryland with DJ Durkin.
This is the Ken Carman Show.
Back on CBS Sports Radio, Ken Carmen until 2 a.m. Eastern, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. So much going on around college football, and earlier we talked about Urban Meyer, we talked about Tom Herman, whether or not there is or is not a correlation. Another story going out right now, Maryland, and what is going on with DJ Durkin and how he might not even survive this week, as we're only a few weeks away until the season actually starts. To talk about that, we welcome in Jeff Ehrman. He is inside MDSports.com. He basically runs everything there. Follow him on Twitter at Jeff_Ehrman. Jeff, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, first off, Jordan McNair, an offensive lineman, he passes away after conditioning back in June. Now, I got to get some clarification here in the backstory. There was no autopsy done. Is that standard when he passed away before we get into the DJ Durkin stuff and what's just been alleged, or is this something that kind of had some people scratching their heads?
Yeah, some people have asked about why that wasn't done. And, I think it might have been the request of the family, but honestly, I don't cover this sort of story very often, so I couldn't tell you if that's standard. I know that by then it was very well established that he had suffered heat stroke, so maybe that was why. But yeah, you're right about that. There was no autopsy.
So when do these allegations of abuse by DJ Durkin and his staff, his conditioning coach, the most notable person on here, when do these first come to the surface?
So on Friday, ESPN published two different stories, one with quotes from the attorney of Jordan McNair's family, claiming that that Maryland didn't respond properly to McNair's illness when he showed signs of heat stroke, that they should have put him in ice rather than putting him in front of a fan, and that they waited too long to call 911. And then there was a second separate article that, used quotes from some unnamed sources saying that there's a toxic culture inside the program of intimidation from coaches, and even some, one of the anecdotes they had was a player who was allegedly forced to overeat as punishment, and, other similar stories like that. So there's kind of two layers to this story.
Jeff Ehrman joining us on the show. So DJ Durkin's been put on administrative leave. This has been certainly put out there in the public specter. We do have the family of Jordan McNair, who they and their attorney is calling for DJ Durkin to be fired. What's the latest if anything, right now as of Sunday night into Monday morning about his status with the Maryland Terrapins?
Well, after the second ESPN story with the allegations about the culture of the program on Friday, he coached practice on Saturday, and then later that afternoon was told that he was being placed on administrative leave. So that's pretty much where it stands now. A lot of people, for good reason, doubt that he'll be back at this point, depending on how things unfold. But as of right now, he's on administrative leave. His offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, is the interim head coach, and so his status is very much up in the air. I know he's going to fight for his job. I don't think that he's going to go quietly, but, it's at this point, it's hard to see how he gets back into his position.
Were there any rumors about these allegations before they actually got brought to light, or did this kind of blindside everybody in the media?
There were rumors about the McNair situation and about the allegations that the medical staff did not treat him properly in terms of an abusive culture. No, you never really heard things like that. Players all almost uniformly seem to love Durkin. He hasn't had a lot of transfers. He had quite a few guys last offseason who could have either just exhausted their eligibility and graduated or gone on to the NFL, who just decided to come back and play for him. He's very universally well-liked. I should point out, none of those allegations in that article were directly about him. Mm-hmm. They didn't name him, but it's more of a cultural allegation. But no, you really didn't hear that kind of thing.
Well, about that type of stuff, and one of the ESPN articles that I'm just reading right now is that the strength and conditioning coach was the one at the front that everybody hated. If DJ Durkin wanted it, there was an allegation that if DJ Durkin wanted to participate in any of this stuff, that he put it on the strength coach, and the strength coach was the bad guy. Had you heard anything that was kind of around there?
Yeah, the strength coach is definitely an old school, super intense, aggressive kind of guy. Love him or hate him, and definitely there were some people who didn't get along that well with him, players and coaches. So, you know, I think you hate to say it, but sometimes loyalty can hurt you. And I think Durkin's been loyal to Rick Cord, the strength coach, since they worked together early in their career at Bowling Green. And you're right, he is the one that a lot of this talk centers around.
I've read a couple of players who have stood up for him. What has been the sentiment overall from the current players?
They haven't really spoken much. The media, they haven't been made available to the media actually since the start of camp, more than a week ago, because the university saw this story brewing, I think it's safe to say. So all we can go by is their Twitter. You know, several of them have been supportive on social media of Durkin, but it will be very interesting to see what they say once they're allowed to start speaking with the media, but that hasn't happened yet.
Jeff Herman joining us on the show, InsideMDSports.com. Did you hear what Will Muschamp had to say?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't surprised by it, you know, and there's some validity to that. I mean, as a reporter, I've used unnamed sources many times, but I feel like on a story of this magnitude where it's this damaging and can potentially ruin someone's career and you know, just something this accusatory, you should have a mix at least. You know, I feel like there should be some names behind some of the quotes, because for all we know, and I know this is the feeling of some inside the program, is those were just the words of a couple of players who didn't really succeed under Durkin, and one or two coaches who parted ways with him not on the best terms. You know, that's the way they feel, and that's not to minimize their statements. They could be true, and you know, but that's the reality of it. So I do agree. I think that there should, you can use unnamed sources, but if you're going to basically go for a kill shot on a guy's career, there should be some names behind it. And I wasn't surprised by what he said about respecting Durkin, because he's very well respected in the profession.
Well, some people got really upset about what Will Muschamp said, and I listened to the comments. You know, the anonymous sources, you think, okay, well, if you look back in history, obviously a lot of things in history were done with anonymous sources. Okay. Maybe that was a bit far. I understand what you're saying, but maybe it was a bit far. The first part he talks about, though, where you don't have to look far to find somebody who's going to be disgruntled. It's sympathize isn't the word. It's not the right word, Jeff, but I had to try to understand that, because any coach out there who's been any bit successful whatsoever, you know there's going to be kids who are angry. Sure. Nobody wants to blame themselves. It was always you didn't get a shot. There were certain things that you didn't understand, and maybe, you know, 20 years down the line you understand, or maybe you harbor that your entire life. But I do think at the beginning of that statement, in the two-minute clip that was shown in the answer from Will Muschamp that has gone all over social media, that first part is something that I think a lot of coaches are always thinking about going, yeah, but you got to understand, this is a kid who was late, or what, you know, whatever circumstance it might be that we don't always see in the general public that the coach has to deal with.
Exactly. You're cycling 80-something kids through every single year. There's going to be some who aren't happy with their time. So, you know, that, again, I think that's the feeling of several people, maybe the entire staff. I can't say that for sure, but that is their feeling, and that's why I think, you know, it's, I don't know if I want to say unprofessional, but I think it's a little remiss to come out with an article with all of those sort of allegations and not name any names.
Jeff Herman joining us on the show, InsideMDSports.com. Follow him on Twitter, @Jeff_Herman. So what would you put the chances are that DJ Durkin comes out of this and is the head coach at Maryland to start the season?
Not very good. You know, it's the public relations battle is already a landslide. Maryland was caught flat-footed in this whole thing. They haven't really, you know, rather than defending him, they reacted to the story by placing him on leave. So, you know, I think that there's a good chance that they'll that players and others will come out and defend him. But you know, the problem is for him, the challenge for him is that you're fighting two battles: one about these allegations about his program, and the second that a player died. You know, that you put those two together, and just with the way the public is now and the outrage that you get on these stories, and people not necessarily seeing all the nuance to it, they're just going to look at this story with these terrible allegations and the player dying, and it's going to be hard for Maryland to justify bringing him back regardless of everything else. So it's possible, but I wouldn't bet on him being back.
Jeff Herman joining us on the show. So Matt Canada, the interim head coach for the rest of 2018, maybe could be the way it's taken?
Yeah, that's quite possible. He was named yesterday as interim coach, I think largely because he's new to the program. He was hired in January. So down the road, if whatever comes up down the road, you know, he's not going to be attached to it because he wasn't there for any of it. Barring some sort of other change, or unless Durkin's reinstated, he'll be running the show for the rest of the season, which will be his first time as a head coach in a 25-year coaching career.
Football-wise, what type of season was expected for Maryland by you?
I think that most people expected them to be probably in that 500 range, mostly because the Big Ten East is always so difficult. You know, obviously Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State, that's four tough games every year. But the talent level there is higher than it's been in several years. You know, they have a really talented offense, especially at running back on the offensive line. They have a couple quarterbacks who are good, who are both coming back from injuries that kept them out all last year. And, you know, just in general, the talent's been upgraded. He signed top 25 classes 2 years in a row, which had never happened before at Maryland. So, you know, there was some upside to this team, and maybe there still is. Who knows? There's no telling how they respond to all of this. But I think there was some cautious optimism about this being a pretty good team.
What NCAA involvement could happen here?
That's a tough one. I really don't know. I don't think that the NCAA would necessarily get involved in something like this. They seem to stick more to, like, administrative and cheating cases. Anything's possible, but, you know, I haven't heard of any NCAA involvement. It's really early, though, still in the story. So, it's really hard to say at this point.
Jeff, thank you very much for the time, man. Know it's a difficult thing to be talking about. We do appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time, and hopefully all the best to you in the future.
Most definitely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Herman joining us on the show, InsideMDSports.com. Remember, the toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Make sure you go to Geico.com. Coming up next, come on, say it with me. Tiger's back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.